Welcome to another audience interview brought to you by the Speed Art Museum, Kentucky Tourism Arts and Heritage Foundation. I'm your host, Doug Driesbach, and today we're excited to catch up with Andre Chemo Stone Guest, who has recently been named President and CEO of Fund for the Arts. Welcome, Andre.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to have this discussion with you here on this beautiful sunny day.
Beautiful sunny day at Quills in Nulu. And if it's hot, you don't have to drink coffee here. You can find a cool, refreshing iced tea.
I got me a tangerine and ginger tea, so I'm ripping and ready to go.
Sounds great. Well, congrats on your new role at the Fund for the Arts. You know, you certainly have big shoes to fill after a great run by Kristen Boone. So we're excited to hear everything you have to say today. And, you know, being a Louisville native, you can appreciate the importance of an organization like Fund for the Arts and everything that they've done up to now. But what initially drew your interest to the position, and what are you looking forward to the most about the role?
So, yeah, I'm born and raised here in Louisville in Smoketown, in Smoketown neighborhood. Family goes back in Smoketown over 100 years, so deep roots in the community. A very circuitous route to where I find myself sitting here with you as the new president and CEO of the Fund for the Arts. I started out I got accepted to Boston University right out of high school, went to Mill High School. In a six-year medical program, I thought I wanted to be a physician, but I found out very quickly I didn't want to be a doctor. So I ended up coming home and going to University of Louisville, studied economics, got a degree in economics with a minor in actuarial math. I found out about actuarial math like my junior year, because I found out if you could pass one of those exams, you'd guarantee yourself a job, and I was always really good at math. So I passed the first actuarial exam, got a job at Capital Holding. Worked there for 4 years, but, you know, sort of found out after about my second year, I don't really want to do this. I don't really like the corporate world. I really wanted my life's work to have something, to have an impact that was something better or greater than my own sort of personal bottom line or the bottom line for a company. So I was able to transition into the nonprofit world, working for the Lincoln Foundation here in Louisville. Lincoln Foundation is an operating educational foundation that runs programs for academically talented, economically disadvantaged youth. I'd gone through a couple of their programs when I was a kid, and had a good relationship with the president at the time, Dr. Sam Robinson. I went to middle school with his daughter, and oddly enough, that same daughter went to college with my wife. And so we reconnected, and I started working for him, and after about a year or two, he began to think about a succession plan for himself. So he promoted me to vice president and was grooming me to be the next president. Ended up going back to University of Louisville to work on a PhD in urban and public affairs. Was writing my dissertation when I got a call from who was my dear friend at the time, and still my dear friend, is Wynton Marsalis. In New York, and asked me if I'd be interested in coming to help them prepare for moving into and building their new, what is now the Jazz at Lincoln Center's new home at Columbus Circle and the Time Warner Center in Columbus Circle. So I was like, wow, this is like an opportunity of a lifetime. So packed up my wife and three young children, 7, 4, and 1 at the time, and moved to New York. Worked there started off as this chief financial officer, then a couple of years later became the executive producer, so produced all the concerts and tours all over the world. I did that for almost 7 years, and left there and started my own consulting, management and consulting firm, Guestworks Inc. Did a combination of managing the career of some world-class artists, Grammy Award-winning world-class artists, and also doing some really exciting consulting work with arts organizations all over the world. You know, just did a really exciting project in Singapore during that time. I was working on a consulting project in 2010 in Pittsburgh, and found out that they had an opening for the CEO of the August Wilson Center for African American Culture in Pittsburgh. So ended up getting offered that job, had a 2-year contract, did it for 2 years, didn't renew my contract, decided, you know, we needed to figure out what we were gonna do next, and instead of moving back to New York or staying in Pittsburgh, since my wife and I are both from here, we decided to move back, and that was in 2012. So I've actually been back in Louisville for 8 years. A lot of people think that I just moved back, but it's kind of like I just moved back because I was traveling 150 to 200 days a year. And then actually my wife and I had decided in 2019 that we were going to move to New Orleans. The reason we were staying is to really get our daughters, our two younger daughters, out of school. Because when we moved back in 2012, one was in the 11th grade and one was in the 8th grade. And now the 11th grader just finished her master's degree, and the 8th grader graduated from Berea in May. So that was the milestone for us. When she finished her bachelor's degree, we were gonna move. But then COVID happened, and then, you know, and Breonna Taylor happened, and George Floyd happened. And so my wife and I kind of looked at each other and was like, we can't leave. We have to stay here, and we have to get involved. And one of the reasons that I wasn't involved is because I just didn't have the time. I didn't want to, you know, stick my toe sort of halfway in the water. If I was going to be involved, I needed to be involved. So we decided, you know, I went back to consulting full time. A lot of projects were coming my way, none in Louisville. I was doing a lot of projects nationally. Things were well. We bought a condo on St. James Court, and our empty nest forever home, our retirement home. And, you know, I was going along doing these projects and having a good time. Life was good. And then a friend of mine, I got an email from someone that I had, that had sent me a LinkedIn invitation. Now you get a LinkedIn invitation and you don't respond to it, and they send you a reminder. It's like, this person's waiting for you. And I was like, I don't want them to think I'm ignoring them. So I clicked on accept, and it took me to the site. And I really, like, almost never use LinkedIn. And I went to LinkedIn, and for some reason or another, I had a bunch of messages which I had not read. But for some reason or another, my eye was drawn to a message from someone that sent me, and I clicked on it. It was from a woman who works at GE named Katina Whitlock. And she said, I think this job is perfect for you. And it was the posting for the Fund for the Arts job. And I clicked on it, and I read it, and it was like, wow, it was as if the job description had been written with me in mind, in terms of my experience, in terms of what they're trying to do with equity, diversity, inclusion, in terms of all of the things that the fund had really been doing to set up all of these things with the cultural plan for the city, Imagine 2020, and then Imagine 2025. And I was like, wow, this is like, it was really refreshing and eye-opening, because I hadn't been paying attention to any of that. Mm-hmm. I'd just been hearing the problems, you know. And so I applied for it on the spot. And he's like, you know, they had a consulting firm that's doing the search. So I pulled my resume out, changed a couple of things, wrote the cover letter, sent it. And I went in. My wife was in the other room. And I went in. And I was like, Cheryl, guess what? I just applied for a job.
She said, what?
And she's like, what? A job? She says, wait, where? Right? I said, here. She says, you know, even before she even asked me what the job is, she says, you apply for a job? Really? I see, because after Pittsburgh, you know, in doing the consulting and doing the management and traveling, because, you know, traveling all over the world, having these, you know, tremendous opportunities to work with these artists and organizations all over the country, I was like, you know, I couldn't imagine myself going back into an office. I couldn't imagine myself sort of quote unquote working for someone again. And, but, you know, the opportunity was so, it was like a calling. It was like I had to do it. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, where we find ourselves now and why we decided to stay. Because I was going to get involved in, you know, in the art community and, you know, get volunteer and be on some boards and try to bring some of the things that I had access to nationally here to sort of help some of the healing. But when I read the job description, healing, EDI, transformation, I was like, wow, I got to do this. So that's how, I mean, that's a long way of saying, you know, how little kid from Smoketown ended up clicking and opening the job description.
It's quite the journey.
Yeah. Clicking on the job description and reading the job description that read like it was actually written for that little boy from Smoketown coming back home to take on this role.
Wow. What a great story. So taking all that in that you just described throughout your career, how does Louisville really, the arts community in Louisville really compare to some of the other places, New York, Pittsburgh, and areas?
Well, I will say this, that Louisville's art footprint is disproportionate to the size of the city, disproportionately large.
Okay.
Okay. You know, Louisville for the longest time, I think at one point in time, had the largest per capita giving in the arts than any other city in the country. The arts community and the arts organizations, because of organizations like Fund for the Arts, historically have sort of banded together to to move the arts forward. It hasn't always been as inclusive as it could be, which is why they did, went through the work in 2017 and added an ED&I push to the plans. And now, of course, because of all the things that have gone on recently, there's much more focus on it. So, but you know, having said that, the one thing I do like about the scene in Louisville, and I'll compare it to the other cities in a second, is that it the community is small enough that you can take that art footprint, and while you're an expand while you're expanding it, you can still steer it in a direction where a significant amount of that ecosystem can move in that direction. And the city has saw value in developing a cultural plan that involves the entire ecosystem. Now we got to do a better job of making sure that all aspects of the ecosystem are included in the plan, and that's part of my charge in this. But that we can move this and steer it in a huge in a direction that gets us to where we need to go, which is north, moving forward and taking everybody with us. You know how it compares. I mean, you can't compare any other city to the New Yorks and the LAs of the world, because they have their own sort of micro ecosystems of art. Mm-hmm. And there's not necessarily a community or a citywide effort to promote it or even understand it, how it works together in a way to enhance all aspects of it. Now, a town like Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh has a very, very strong local art scene, particularly an African American art scene. Hence, they have the August Wilson Center for African American Culture on Liberty Avenue with all of the rest of the large institutions. It takes up a block of its own. And but the thing about Pittsburgh has a shared services model that a lot of the large foundations came together and sort of mandated to a certain extent that these organizations work together. But one thing about Pittsburgh is that it has those large funders, like, you know, funders who have assets under management of over $1 billion. So a lot of the voices, a lot of the direction can come from those voices because they have so much money. I'm not saying that they are steering the policy, but when you have somebody you can go directly to, right, for those kind of things, it's kind of hard to steer unless you have them all, mm-hmm. you know, deciding that this is what we want to do for the city. So that's how Louisville is situated. I think Louisville is perfectly situated given the history of how, you know, the city has formed and come around its arts, where some may have seen in the past that that may have not necessarily been the best thing. But I think now that we have the fact that there is a history of that moving together, as long as we widen the access and make sure that as much of the ecosystem, if not all the ecosystem, is involved, then we can use that history to our advantage.
Absolutely. You know, and you hear time and time again that art, whether it's theater or music or symphonies, is sometimes a reflection of what you see in society and what you mm-hmm. see in day-to-day life. So it's going to be interesting in the next years to come on what we see on the stages right. as of everything that's coming out of the community and everything going on. So have you had a chance to really look into the current programs at Fund for the Arts and get an idea of what's going on right now and what the next chapter is going to be like? I know it's everybody's getting on and going forward, going north, as you mentioned.
Right.
Do you see the programs that are in place right now to be beneficial, or do you want to change them?
I'm taking full inventory. I'm in complete listening and learning mode. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a change for change sake. I mean, I want to live out the vision of the organization, which is to have art enrich the lives of every person in every neighborhood every day. But I want to make sure that every is every.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the vision is there, right, in terms of what we need to do. It's just a matter of living that out and understanding, taking an inventory of what it is that we're doing. I really want to understand the needs, the wants, the desires, where the gaps are from as wide a constituency as I can. And then, you know, coming from a consulting background, that's sort of what I do, right? I go in, you know, try to understand or assess an issue for a client. You hear from all of these multiple stakeholders. You distill it all down into key issues. You then go back to the client and say, these are the issues that we're dealing with. How do we deal with them? So I'm doing my own sort of mini internal consulting project right now.
You're your own consultant.
I'm doing all of this. I'm going to look at it, put all of those, everything that I hear on a wall and find where the, you know, where the trends are, what I'm hearing here and where I'm hearing there, and distill them down to some key issues. And then begin to have a discussion with the staff and the board and see, okay, this is what we've done. This is what I'm hearing. Where are the gaps? And then how are we going to move forward to, so that we are, like, you know, talking about moving the ecosystems north, but also living up to that vision of enriching the lives of everybody in every neighborhood every day.
Why do you feel the arts are so important to communities of every ecosystem, of every part of the city and world? But what is it about the arts that you feel is important for people?
Well, at its most irreducible essence, art is a reflection of the human condition. Like, to me, all art is storytelling. And those stories that we tell ourselves or we tell others help us to make sense of the world around us. And whether it's a visual art, it's, you know, an artist is trying to convey, it's like, okay, I'm sitting in this place right now at this time. And I have the history of that I'm looking back on that has made me who I am or has made others around me the way that they are. And I have these hopes and dreams or even, you know, fears for the future. How am I going to deal with that? And then art is created. And art is an important part of the historical record, because a lot of the time, you know, when we learn history, we open up the book and we read this happened on this date, this happened on that day. But when we really engage with history, we really try to understand what was going on as opposed to dates and events. We often deal with history through the lens of art, whether that art was art that came from that time or whether it is someone dealing with that time today in art. Mm-hmm. So that's why art is so important. And the other thing is art is one of the huge lever points that we can use to help heal and transform and bring about some level of equality with human beings. You know, I often say that there are two things. When we talk about equity and equality, I say that a commitment to equity in the arts is an investment in equality in humanity. Mm-hmm. And what do I mean by that? It means if we look at the disparities that we often hear on the news and talk about all the time, particularly racial disparities or disparities between any group that is underrepresented. You know, what are the ones we hear? We hear socioeconomic wealth. We hear education. We hear housing. We hear health. Now, if we could wave a magic wand tomorrow or today and close the gap on all of those disparities, you know, you could have someone who's a billionaire, lives on the biggest house on the hill, has 5 PhDs. But that doesn't mean that someone who is not like that person is going to look at them and say, you're my equal, mm-hmm. right? And so if we're ever going to realize Dr. King's dream of people judging each other by the content of their character, I think there are a couple of ways that we can get to that level of equality. It's, you know, the first one is through spirituality. Notice I didn't say religion, because religion can and often does divide, right? Mm-hmm. But spirituality, it's your relationship to your creator and how that relationship governs your relationship to your fellow human being, right? And the other one is the arts. Because like I said before, art at its most irreducible essence is how we reflect and deal with the human condition. But art has the ability to strip away all of the tribal differences of human beings and reduce us to our Homo sapien DNA, where we are all human. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, as it strips us down, it also elevates us to our humanity of how we deal with each other. I used to say all the time, life on Mars, the end of racism, sexism, whatever, as we know it. Mm-hmm. Because if we find that there's another intelligent being in the world, all of a sudden, Russia and America becomes non-existent, mm-hmm. right? We become human beings that have to fight for our own survival. We're all earthlings,
yeah.
right? And so art has that power to bring us down to our humanity and deal with each other as human beings.
That's an interesting point of view. And you know that I've got younger kids. My youngest is going into the sixth grade, but we were sitting at the dinner table the other day. He's looking out the window. So he's looking at. He said, "I'm looking at that tree." Mm. I said, "Well, draw that tree." Mm. And it was amazing. And my wife and I said, we need to pay better attention to what our kids are doing because they're always on devices and they don't pick up a pencil and sketch. Right. We grew up doing that. Very small things like that. So we worked on sketching. And that was an interesting thing and an eye-opening thing to really teach the youth kind of exploring the arts and what they can do and figure out. So, you know, a little over a year ago, COVID shut down the stages around the world. Mm-hmm. It was a dark time for a lot of people, not only in the arts, but businesses and society as we know it. From the cast of directors, producers, performers, and even back of house. Looking back, where were you in that journey of the, were you in Pittsburgh when the COVID came?
No. Yeah, I've been back here for 8 years. I was here.
Okay.
I was one of my clients, Christian McBride, bassist Christian McBride. He had done two jazz cruises back to back. And my wife and I were on those cruises with him. So
you were out at sea?
Yeah, we were. And we got back in February.
Okay.
Like February the 7th or something like that. So, you know, the first few cases of the coronavirus had been, you know, they heard about it in China. So when we were getting on the second cruise, there was a whole thing about, you know, there's this virus. And, you know, at that point, we're thinking like SARS or something, that it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't come and affect us, right? It might be an issue, but it's not going to come over here. And if it does, it'll be contained. So, you know, we got on the boat. And then when we got home in the middle of, you know, like February the 10th or something like that, it started getting a little more serious. And by a month later, really like March the 11th, that's when it all shut down. And so at the time, the business that we were dealing in, you know, a significant amount of what we were doing were with artists. So our artists lost. So we saw it happen in the arts like instantly. Like all of our artists, their work completely shut down.
Yeah.
And so, you know, thankfully for myself, there were some consulting projects that I was working on, and there were some people who were taking this as an opportunity to say, hey, we have access to people we can bring together. We can still work remotely. And they were trying to figure out how they're going to deal with COVID and those kinds of things. So that I was able to activate a certain amount of my consulting practice at that time. But the work was coming in at such a level. And I'm a writer. So I was working on a couple of novels and writing a bunch of essays. So I had actually decided before COVID really hit that I was going to pare back on the management. It was one of the reasons we wanted to move to New Orleans, is I was going to do a lot more writing. So we decided to give our artists notice, and we shut down closed the doors on our artist management practice in August of last year. And I began to focus more on writing and also on consulting. So, I mean, I saw it sort of firsthand. It was like, almost everybody that I knew, because that was the world that I lived in, it affected them like instantly. You know, other industries, it didn't necessarily affect them as much because everyone's livelihood, you could, you know, if you were a restaurant, of course it affected you, but you could figure out a way to pivot and maybe do carry out, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the musicians that I was working with, boom, they had to figure out how to get in front of people with Zoom like everybody else was. So,
and there were some live streams that some of the artists did that did okay, but they still weren't filling the gap in the void of live entertainment. Looking back, some of the assumptions that you made initially, do you feel like they were accurate?
Well, I felt at the time, I made my bold predictions about what I thought the new normal was going to be. And the first thing I thought that happened, I think that the work life was forever changed, because you know, one of the things that happened with the pandemic is that you had this once in a lifetime opportunity. Well, it is an opportunity for employers to get their employees trained in technology in a way that they had to do it. Mm-hmm. They had to sink or swim. It was Darwinian, right? So you now if a company decided 2 years ago, it's like, I want everybody to be able to figure out how to work remotely because we're not going to have an office anymore, it'd be hard, especially for some of your key employees that didn't want to function in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But now you had to do it. There was no choice. So now these companies are seeing these efficiencies take place, and then employees are looking like, well, I don't know if I really want to go back to a regular work week. I like working in my pajamas. I like having mm-hmm. my time to be my time. I like working at 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. and, mm-hmm. you know, watching The Price is Right in the morning or whatever it might be, right? So I thought that part of it was forever changed. The thing about venues, I think people are craving gathering and getting back together, but I think there's a certain segment of that is forever changed too. And I think it's forever changed in the minds of the presenters of art, because to a certain extent, for live music venues, live performing venues like there are here, your audience was a local or a regional one, someone who could drive. But now you have the entire world as your audience. And so you think about ways, how do you do both ends? And can you monetize that to get an incremental dollar over what it cost you to get it out to the rest of the world? Mm-hmm. Of course, you're competing with everybody else in the world in doing that. But if you have a better mousetrap, you could see this as an opportunity.
Do you think there's any silver linings that came out of COVID? You know, we hear a lot of the negative things that came out of it, and certainly there was a lot of negative that came out of it. But do you think when you step back and look at what came out of COVID positively, like you mentioned the streams and maybe right. other revenue opportunities, what silver linings do you think?
Do you mean specifically for the arts?
For the arts.
For the arts? Well, I think this applies to the arts, but I think it applies to everyone. Like last year, and we're sort of tailing out of this now, you know, this is end of June. At the end of June last year, you could become completely selfish and decide to do something for your own personal development and just check out and just be focused completely on yourself. And pretty much no one would care.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like nobody would be like, where's Andre? You know what I mean?
Because uh-huh.
everybody's just trying to figure it out. You know, if you wanted to read 10 books on self-improvement. So that year, or 18 months, however you want to look at it, was an opportunity for everybody, individuals, organizations, to really, if you could get past the fear, to really look at how can we be better? How can we work on things that we never got a chance to work on before?
Mm-hmm.
And I say to people, if you don't have something coming out of COVID that you're better at, that you weren't good going into it, it's really our own fault.
But, had a lot of time on our hands.
Yes, right. So you had to really... Now, that's not to say that, you know, that's easier said than done, right? Because there's fear, people are dying. I don't mean to over-trivialize it. But there was, if you could get over that initial shock and then think about where you found yourself, there was an opportunity to grow. There was an opportunity to understand the world that you live in and try to get, you know, ahead of it. It's an opportunity to be able to deal with adversity so that you could better deal with it. And speaking of that, like when I started my business, when I left Jazz and Lincoln Center, it was late 2006, early 2007. You know, that was a horrible time to start your own business because that was right before the housing bubble hit. Right? And so it was a rough time for us. But that rough time, understanding that and having dealt with it, really prepared us for this. And so that's why I was able to say, okay, let's hunker down. Let's understand. We know what this is from an economic standpoint anyway, not necessarily a quarantine standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we, knowing what we know, how do we get better? How do we come out of this, as intact as possible economically, but, you know, so spiritually in terms of where we find ourselves practically and skills wise, how do we come out of it better?
Excellent. Well, in closing, elevator speech on Andre and your next chapter for the Fund for the Arts. How do you describe in a quick summary of what we can look forward to in the coming years and the excitement that you're going to bring to the Fund for the Arts?
Well, I can, you know, the immediate, because I can say that the world has a spotlight on Louisville right now for reasons that we don't like the spotlight to be. And quite frankly, the main reason I'm interested in this job is because the the chasm that exists in my city, in my hometown, between the racial tension, the Ninth Street divide, and the segregation that we have. I feel like I have a responsibility to do everything I can to deal with that in my own community, to help promote healing in that community. I'm looking at it concentrically. I need to deal with myself, I need to deal with my family, I need to deal with my community, and I need to deal with my city and then the nation as a whole. So I think what it is that we have, you know, in the short term, and where it is and why I'm in this position, why I wanted it, is because I want that spotlight that's here, I want it to capture things that shows the world that although we may have done some things and had a certain attitude about things, knowingly and unknowingly, that have to do with racial disparities and all kinds of the isms that separate us, the tribal isms, that we are better than that. We are going to be intentional about overcoming them. We're going to heal. We're going to transform this city. We're going to give you something to see while that spotlight is here. And we're going to use the arts to do that for all communities. Because it's not just about one community. It's about a healing. Everybody needs to be able to heal because, you know, we're suffering right now. You know, we are, if the city were being diagnosed, we probably would be diagnosed with, you know, at least depression, right?
Well, that's definitely exciting, because what a better thing to bring everybody together than the arts
in
some way, shape, or form. Well, the last part we always like to do is get a few quick things about Andre. Mm-hmm. Let me hear a little bit more about you. And first off, which do you have a favorite art genre as far as whether it's Broadway or jazz music or whatever?
You know, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool jazz guy, so my jazz folks would call me up if I said anything else. I love jazz music, yes.
Favorite venue to watch a live performance?
And
if there's one or two. If there's more than one, that's fine.
I'm trying to think. Probably the Village Vanguard.
Where's that?
In New York. It's a little small jazz club.
Cool. Favorite city to visit?
Nationally, it's San Francisco. And internationally, it would be... What is it? It's on the tip of my tongue. I can't... Internationally, I can't pick one internationally. I'm sitting there running through my mind, but San Francisco national.
All right. And are there any cities that you want to visit but you haven't yet?
No, I think I've been everywhere I really want to go.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very fortunate. I've been on every continent except for Antarctica.
Mm-hmm. So wow, that's traveled life.
Yeah.
Favorite things about Louisville?
It's my hometown. My neighborhood, Smoketown, the history, my family. It's my hometown.
Everything.
Yeah.
any current books, TV series, podcasts that you're into right now?
I'm reading the Richard Wright novel that came out as a short story, but he got the full novel out now. It's The Man Who Lived Underground, I think is the name of it. I'm staying quiet on a bunch of other stuff because I'm taking all this information in.
Uh-huh.
But that's the book that I'm reading right now.
Hobbies or pastimes?
I'm a big health guy. So I have a Peloton bike. I walk a lot when I'm thinking, but I'm on my Peloton almost every day.
Excellent. And then lastly, any bucket list items that you're still trying to cross off the list?
You know, this may sound crazy, but I could die tomorrow and no regrets. I've done everything that I want to do. And this job I've been fortunate to have once in a lifetime opportunities at least four times in my life.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you for listening to another audience interview brought to you by the Speed Art Museum and Kentucky Tourism of Arts and Heritage. Be sure to check out fundforthearts.org for ways that you can be a part of the fund and support them for their efforts. Also, be sure to check out audience502.com for more audience interviews with arts and entertainment advocates in Louisville. Andre, thanks for joining us today, and good luck with everything.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.